Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Fulbright NATO Excellence Award webinar. My name is Michelle Belorchi, and I'm at the Institute of International Education in Washington, D.C., and I'm joined by my colleagues Leslie Nunez-Goodman at the Bureau of European and Eurasian Affairs at the U.S. Department of State, as well as Melissa Sokol, Ph.D., Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs at the U.S. Department of State. Leslie also was a former public affairs officer in Riga in Latvia and currently serves as the public diplomacy officer for Latvia. So we're very grateful that she can join us today and share some insight about the award and the opportunity.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. So moving right along, before we dive into the details of the award opportunity, I'd like to give a little background about the Fulbright program. The Fulbright program was established in 1946 by Senator J. William Fulbright from Arkansas, and he had his own exchange experience abroad through the Rhodes Scholarship and was able to see firsthand the value of international and people-to-people exchange in fostering mutual understanding. Using the sale of surplus U.S. government World War II property to fund the program, he introduced the bill to Congress, and it was signed into law by President Truman. The Fulbright program remains the flagship international education exchange program designed to increase mutual understanding between the people of the United States and the people of other nations, and is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State's Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, known as ECA. The program is administered by the Institute of International Education, IIE, in close collaboration with U.S. embassies and binational Fulbright commissions abroad. Today, the program operates in approximately 135 countries worldwide, and its alumni include 84 Pulitzer Prize winners and 59 Nobel Prize winners. Now, the photos here in this slide are really meant to show how the program has evolved over the past decade. In the image on the left, we have Dr. Joseph Weissy, a professor of English from East Carolina College, who is discussing a planned book on Burmese dancing with Kenneth Sein, one of Burma's leading dancers, during his Fulbright Research Scholar grant in the early 1960s. This picture represents the traditional core part of the Fulbright Scholar Program, which is focused on research and teaching. On the right is Linda Chamberlain, a professor from the University of Alaska, and a public health scientist, who was a 2014-2016 Fulbright Arctic Scholar. The Arctic program, like this grant opportunity, takes a fresh new spin on the traditional Fulbright program, bringing together a network of researchers from the U.S., Canada, Denmark, Finland, Iceland, Norway, Russia, and Sweden to stimulate scientific collaboration on Arctic issues. The Fulbright NATO Excellence Award is another innovation on the Fulbright program, helping to build mutual understanding and contribute to strengthening transatlantic ties. And just in case we have anybody listening in who would be a better fit for the student program, I want to speak to the eligibility for this program. This is strictly for professionals and faculty or independent scholars, and if you're a student who has recently completed a bachelor's degree or is currently in a master's program, please refer to the Fulbright student program for more information. Okay, now in terms of the eligibility for the U.S. Scholar Program and for this award, we do require U.S. citizenship. So this is the U.S. side of the program. If you're a non-U.S. citizen or a permanent resident in the U.S., that wouldn't suffice. So the non-U.S. citizens can apply for the Fulbright Visiting Scholar Program, and there's more information on our website. So in terms of the other eligibility criteria, it really depends on the award. So we'll be going over the requirements for the NATO award, but the vast majority do require a PhD or terminal degree. But we do have some openings for scholars and applicants who hold a master's degree and several years of experience. In the scholar program, there are awards that are open to professionals and artists outside of academia, so those are opportunities that are available. And then again, depending on the award teaching experience, this award that we're speaking about today, however, is strictly a research grant. And then if you've held a Fulbright Scholar grant in the past, we do have a new policy that allows you to reapply to the program with a 2-year waiting period. So there's more information on that as well. Okay, so let's dive right in, and I want to turn it over to Leslie, and if Melissa has any contributions or any questions that can get clarified. But to start out, the Fulbright NATO Excellence Award to Latvia, this is a unique opportunity, Leslie. Can you speak a little bit about it and share what the aim and objective is of the grant?
Sure. I mean, openly, this is a grant that would go to fill a Fulbright position. And we've had a Fulbrighters at the Center of Excellence before, but only on a short-term basis. And due to the success of that, we would like to try to see if we can have someone go for a full academic year, 9 to 12 months. To give everyone kind of an understanding of what the Center of Excellence is, NATO has several centers of excellence. They're basically research analysts and strategy hubs for the transatlantic community. Each one has its own theme. For some examples, there is one on energy security. There's one on cybersecurity. And the one in Riga is specifically dedicated to strategic communication. Right now, the biggest aim for the transatlantic community and our NATO allies and partners in terms of strategic communication is really centered around countering a lot of the disinformation that we now see resurging in Europe and in the United States. So a big focus of this grant would probably be to those who are interested in looking at disinformation or malign influence in the information space.
Okay, great. And so related to that, how much of the project statement, how much of it should be devoted to an applicant's individual independent research project versus kind of offering their skills to the projects of the COE?
That is a really good question. Obviously, the COE is always working on various projects and strategic communications plans and looking at different developments that are going on in the information space in and around Europe and the transatlantic community. I would have to say the answer is it depends, and it's case by case. If the applicant has a really interesting, new, innovative research idea that they want to take advantage of the resources the COE has to offer and the resources that NATO has to offer writ large, this could be a good opportunity, whether it's looking at social media or artificial intelligence or techniques in disinformation or countering disinformation, or if it's someone who has skills, who has big data analytics skills, who has messaging skills or strategic planning skills, and is also interested in perhaps learning more, offering their skills to work on already pre-existing research projects at the COE. Those applicants could be just as competitive. I really would say we would have to look at the application, each one case by case.
Okay, excellent. And can you speak a little about the branch where the candidate would be placed, if you have any information on the technical and scientific development branch? What we have in the award description is that the TSDB develops data analysis on the online environment. So will they be strictly there, or will they be also able to interact with colleagues at StratCom in general?
I mean, to give you context, it isn't like that the Center of Excellence is a huge bureaucratic office where people are stovetyped. It is generally a very small team. So although the person would be working most with the chief of the technical and scientific development branch, by all means, they would be working with all sides of the Center of Excellence. And so people should keep that in mind. This is definitely not a Latvian-only community. This is definitely international. The people here are secundered to the Center of Excellence from across the NATO alliance. So they would be working for people from Britain to Canada to Western Europe to France to Germany. It just depends on who's the country to the center of excellence at that time. And everyone at the Center of Excellence is absolutely, the idea is for them to be out and speaking to the transatlantic community about these issues and the work that they are doing.
Excellent. Okay. And in terms of maybe if you could speak a little bit about the other networks, you know, as a Fulbright scholar, if there's a commission or if the embassy administers the program in that country, usually there's different events or different things that the scholar would be involved in outside of the grant, if you could speak to that.
So I think of all the Fulbright opportunities that are out there, this one being so unique because this person would probably be out and about outside of the institution more than traditional Fulbright programs. Because the Center of Excellence, people are out at disinformation conferences and strategic communications conferences. They're out looking at NATO exercises across the region and looking at what kind of what's happening in the information space in and around NATO. One interesting thing is that 2019 is the 70th anniversary of NATO. Which in and of itself presents an interesting time to be working on strategic communications around NATO. 2019 is also the 30th anniversary of the fall of the Iron Curtain, the fall of the Berlin Wall, the 1989 revolutions in South Central and Central Europe. So other opportunities, of course, you'll be liaison with the U.S. Embassy. For Riga, the orientation is done at the embassy. We call upon the Center of Excellence, gets visits from U.S. delegations, U.S. congressmen, representatives, and most likely as our U.S. Fulbrighter at the Center of Excellence, this person would get a lot of face time with U.S. political actors working on or interested in this disinformation conference. Theme.
Excellent. And I've put the time frame up 9 to 12 months, and so it's a longer award if we compare it with other scholar grants. Now, in terms of the time that it can begin, is there any particular preference for the grant in terms of the start date? If you could speak a little bit about that, if there's any particular, given 2019 being a very kind of landmark year. You know, in certain events being held throughout the year?
Our preference would be, if we can, to have someone out there as early as possible in 2019, obviously understanding that, you know, scholars are on an academic track or have to follow an academic calendar. If there's any possibility to start in January 2019, that's our preference, but obviously depending on the candidates' qualifications and how best they fit with the work of the Center of Excellence, it can be flexible.
Okay, great. Well, let's move on to the next slide. And I wanted to speak to the, there we go. Speak to the fact that a letter of invitation from the host institution, so in this case, the COE of Stratcom. So applicants shouldn't be making any contact and they don't require, they shouldn't seek out a letter of invitation. So this is something that's, you know, based on the applicant's proposal and their complete application profile and, you know, the application package, that's kind of what we're looking at. So there's not, they shouldn't be getting expressions of interest from Riga, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, good. Just wanted to clarify that. So the applicant shouldn't be making any contact. And aside from that, in terms of the specific qualifications that we're looking for, I just wanted to put up the disciplines, the degrees that we are looking for, and then some of the desired qualifications. So it's important to note for this award that you don't have to come, you don't have to be a, you know, a faculty or a full-time professor or on the tenure track and all of that. This is open to professionals with, you know, adequate experience who can contribute. So, but Lisa, Leslie, if you wanted to speak to any of the other qualifications or what would make a desirable applicant, any kind of profile in mind that would be a certain success or maybe a combination of attributes?
Well, it's really hard to say. I mean, I've reviewed a lot of Fulbright applications out in the field as a public affairs officer and even in Riga. And I'm always surprised by applicants who come who are really from outside of the box, but then I realize what a great fit they can be for a certain project. I mean, but if I had to say now what the ideal applicant is, it's someone who is interested in how new media and the media environment that we're in now, how that is shaping the narrative about the transatlantic community, about liberal democracy, someone who's interested in how possibly artificial intelligence and bots are used now in social media, how information is received now by young people in Europe and in our transatlantic community in the United States and Canada, someone who's really interested in this disinformation piece and how it's developed and how different organizations, whether they be malign state actors or violent extremists, how they're using information as a kind of hybrid a tool to basically counter some of the positive messages we're trying to promote about our values and our community.
Okay, great. Do we have any questions from the audience? I see that one came in. The question we have here is, before we go on to the rest, is a graduate degree required, or would direct experience with computational propaganda be accepted? I think that would kind of depend, from my end, it would depend on how many years of experience the applicant has, because in general, the Fulbright Scholar Program will take applications from professionals with several years of experience. So I can discuss that with you offline, but Leslie, did you want to add anything in terms of what they're hoping to see from an applicant?
No, I think your answer is exactly right. It depends on the level and the type of experience.
Okay, great. Okay, so that's what we have so far in terms of questions, so we can move on. Let's see what we've got. Okay, and in terms of the application components, I just wanted to go over this briefly, and then we'll be able to take more questions or answer some frequently asked questions. So in terms of the application component, it's a fairly straightforward application form online, and at the core of it is really going to be the project statement, which has a minimum of 3 pages and a maximum of 5. So there is a page minimum and page limit on that. And in that project statement, we ask applicants to provide a kind of a brief self-introduction to the reviewers. Keep in mind the review committee is going to be interdisciplinary, so it's important to speak not only to the specialist but also to the generalist, kind of go through. We do have some links that I'll provide in the webinar, so once this is archived, you can go through and click on everything. We'll put this on the website. But really kind of answer questions like, why are you interested in NATO and this award opportunity, and how does your background and expertise make you a good match? A lot of, you know, half the battle, I like to say, with the Fulbright Scholar Program is really matching your expertise to the right award, having that, you know, being the best fit. So how are you a good fit for the NATO award? What professional experiences and skills do you offer to the host, so in this case, the COE, the STRATCOM, and in particular, maybe to Latvia, although it doesn't have to be specific to Latvia. And then also, what do you hope to gain from the experience? What are the potential impacts, not only while you're there on the grant, but when you come back to the U.S.? You know, we like to have applicants kind of discuss the multiplier effect, not that the Fulbright experience just ends when you get on the airplane back to the U.S., you know. So how will this impact you, your home institution, if you have one, and the work that you're going to be conducting in the future? And then also we'd like to hear how you deal with challenging situations. You know, we all know that foreign workplaces can oftentimes be very different from what we're used to in the U.S. So how do you plan to cope with cultural differences or things maybe not going according to a timeline or any of those kind of, speaking kind of to your adaptability? And then with regard to the research project that you'll be working on, what significance does it hold for you in particular and your career development and career trajectory, and how will the results be shared? So kind of speaking to all of those things, we don't require you to reference anything. You'll be providing that in the bibliography. So think of the bibliography as kind of a literature review. And in addition to the project statement, we do require a resume or CV that does have a page limit of 6 pages. So really it's important to keep in mind listing the most important things, the most relevant things that you would want the review committee to see. We also ask that you provide 3 letters of reference, and when you go in the online application, the way that your recommenders can submit their reference is you need to go in and provide their contact information, specifically their name and their email address, and then click on the invite recommenders. They will then get an automatically generated email from our application system, and then they just click on that, fill in a few, you know, kind of like an application form, fill in their name and their contact and all of that, and then they would upload the document. So that's essentially what the application is all about. It's nothing that you haven't seen before, very straightforward. And again, to underscore, the deadline is October 15th, 11:59 Pacific Standard Time. So let's move on. And I've brought up the review criteria because this is very helpful when applicants are going through and putting their project together and their different components. This is really the rubric that the committee goes through when they look at it. They look at the suitability of the applicant. So they'll see your resume and they'll see what you're proposing and see if that is a good match. And then they'll also consider the quality of the project. And then, of course, as I mentioned, the impact. They want to see what impact on both sides that you're discussing. And then, of course, you know, your record of service in that particular field, your ability to serve as an unofficial cultural ambassador. Keep in mind, again, part of the mission of Fulbright, of course, we want to have academics and professionals go abroad and learn and all of that, but we also we understand that you're representing the U.S. in an unofficial capacity, and so really being able to serve as a cultural ambassador. And then if you have any foreign language that is related to this that would be of value, you can certainly list that in the application. All work will be done in English, but if you do have knowledge of Arabic or Russian, and Leslie, if there's any other language you think would be relevant, they can also mention that in the application form. And if you have experience abroad as well. So all of those things kind of go into the criteria. If you've had any Fulbright awards in the past, any Fulbright Scholar Award, we give preference to those that haven't had a Scholar Award in the past. And then we do encourage veterans or even current active duty military. Is that also? Because we've had some interest from active duty. I don't know if that's, Leslie, do you know anything about that? Veterans, I know we encourage, but I don't know if
I'm sure, I mean, obviously, there's ways for active duty officers to perhaps get seconded to the Center of Excellence, but we would have to look into if they apply through this mechanism, how we would make that happen. But go ahead and apply. We'll figure it out.
Okay, great. Yeah. So in other words, basically, you know, as many as diverse applicants as possible so that we have a very robust applicant pool. So if you feel that you're a good fit for this award, we certainly encourage you to apply. And now we've kind of reached the end. I'm going to open up and see if we have any other questions from the audience. And if you come up with a question after this webinar, please email me. I'm at europeeurasia@iie.org. You can see the award in the catalog of awards. This webinar, as I mentioned, will be archived, and I'll be sending the link to everyone who started an application as well as posting it on our webinar archive. But let me just go back and see if we have any questions. And you're able to type in the chat box any questions that you have. So it looks like we have got all the questions. I'm going to actually address some of the questions that come up quite often. See if we have any.
If I could chime in, just because coincidentally I did live in Riga, I just want to say that it is a truly magical city. It is the hub for the three Baltics, so everyone has to fly into Riga to get to Tallinn, which is only 3 hours away to the east, or Vilnius, which is only 3 hours away to the west. And then from Tallinn, Finland is only a ferry boat ride away. The Baltics is one of these undiscovered parts of Europe that people better get to know before they're discovered. It's incredible people and incredible culture. Just to give you kind of an idea of what the Baltics are like, their revolution came from singing and dancing and linking hands across the Baltics, and that really is them in a nutshell. So it's a pretty amazing opportunity to come work on this really hyper-focused policy issue at a time when there's so much interest in this and a place that's a great place to live. So really exciting. I wish I was a PhD so I could apply.
Great. Well, that's great to hear. It sounds like an exciting award, and it is a unique opportunity that we're offering, I think, for the first time in terms of this grant length. We did have a couple questions that came in via email, and one of them was, when will applicants be notified? And I understand that this award was advertised a little kind of late in the game, and it has an early start date relative to the deadline. And from my understanding, we're going to try and notify applicants by the end of November. So if anybody is curious as to when they'll get notified, especially if you have a January or February start date, we understand. So we're doing our best to have a quick turnaround and get you notified. Leslie, do you have anything else to add in relation to the timeline?
No, nothing really to add. Like I said earlier, we do have some flexibility depending on the quality of the applicant and their experience, and understanding that we are doing this kind of late in the game and people have already started their academic year. So there is flexibility, although I should note that we do have a strong preference to get the person started as early as possible in 2019, given that we're coming up on all these important moments in the history of the transatlantic community.
Yeah, and we did have a question about this one always comes up, how many applications do you get? And so what I like to say is we actually don't share that information per the Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board policy, but the key thing to consider is really a competitive application is one that, as again, the applicant is a good fit to the award, and if you look at the review criteria and all of the boxes kind of are checked off, then you stand a good chance and you will be a competitive applicant. So that's the answer to that question. Leslie, is there anything else that applicants should be aware of? We've got about a little over 2 weeks before the deadline. Anything else that, any kind of last words?
No, again, it's just that you should be aware of that this is a position where you'll be asked to present and speak quite a bit on this disinformation issue. So we're really looking at applicants who already do have kind of a base knowledge experience with disinformation or analytics. So keep that in mind. Definitely not something that if you're for the faint-hearted in terms of presenting or on your ideas. And you are expected to meet quite a bit with visiting delegations from across the transatlantic community. So it's definitely, there's a lot of cross-cultural communication that's required.
Excellent. Well, I think that is, I think that's quite a bit of information to digest, and I think we will close it now. There haven't been any more questions coming in. But I want to thank you, Leslie, for joining us, and also Melissa, who is here with us in D.C. And again, if you have any questions later on that come up after this webinar, please email me at europeeurasia@iie.org. And again, the deadline is October 15th. We look forward to receiving your application. Good luck. Thank you, everyone.